And it becomes less and less about, I want to make more money, and more about, I want to do something that I enjoy, and I want to have more control over my financial future. And so building an audience isn't super available to me because I'm worried about my boss seeing it or my coworker seeing it. And it's this really difficult place because you feel stuck, but you can't really talk to people about it because most people that you're around, you're making more money than they are. From the outside, it looks like you're successful. It looks like you have your shit together, and it looks like you've succeeded. And so then to be able to take that success and kind of put it on the shelf for a period of time and then go and fail at a new thing. So we're building this community that can be an online community that's private. So that way there's zero chance that your boss or your coworker see it unless they themselves are also wanting to leave. What's up, boys and girls? Today, I'm going to talk about a dream that I had, which I haven't had in a while. And I think what happened was I did a post on social media about being a high income earner. If you make six or seven figures and you feel stuck in your job and you don't really know what you should do to get out. So I did this post about how there's a different playbook that if you're trying to start a side hustle, everything that's out there about going to garage sales or driving Uber or being a DoorDash driver, all of this side hustle stuff, most of the content out there is catered to someone who is starting at zero. And that was never really me, to be honest with you. I was a lawyer, so I kind of came into the workforce making 160 grand, and I actually quit on the day that they announced a pay raise from 160 grand to 180 grand. And so I kind of skipped that phase of being completely broke and not having anything. And so I remember when I was working at a law firm, seeing all of that content around doing side hustles at garage sales and like flipping houses on the side. And I actually tried a fair amount of that stuff. But what happened was I did this post about needing a different playbook if you're making six figures a year is kind of like the baseline that I think, you know, you're making enough money that you're not trying to figure out how to pay for your next meal. You're trying to figure out how you can feel a lot more fulfilled in what you do. And so I did this post and I started getting all these DMs from people that were interested in what I was talking about, but they didn't want their boss to see. And so I hadn't really thought about being in that position in a while. And so what happened was I went to sleep and I had this dream that I haven't had in a while. And it's actually much different than the dream that I typically have. What the dream was basically I woke up all within the dream and I had to go back to my law firm job. But it wasn't, I've had this dream before where I go back to my law firm job as a 25-year-old graduating from law school, not really knowing how to do anything and kind of figuring everything out. But the weird thing about this dream, this time that I had it, was I went back as a 34-year-old, but it was like I had never left, like I never quit and started an escape room business that I sold. I'd never done any of the things that I ended up doing. It was just as if I would have been an eighth year associate had I stayed at that law firm job. So I would probably be like on the brink and trying to be stressed out about whether I was going to make partner or not. And so in the dream, I walk into my office and my secretary that I had, her name was Cindy back in the day. And like Cindy was there and she said, "Mr. Williams, these are the assignments that we have to work on right now." And it was just the most bizarre thing. When I pull up my bank account, I have 65 grand in there. And this is what I would do when I would go into my law firm is I would go in, pull up my bank account daily, thinking that something amazing was going to happen. And then I'd kind of scroll on social media to just kind of like get ready for the day. And so I went through that morning process within the dream. And it was just as if nothing had changed and I just stayed in it. And luckily, I have 2 5-year-old twins. And luckily, one of them had a stomach ache. And so he woke me up. And that was basically all that happened in the dream is I sit down, I check my bank account, I look at social media, and then like, boom, I'm up because my twin was sick. But it made me think about what I'm going to talk about right now, which is basically what would I do if I was in that position and I had never left? And the reason why I think it's interesting is because you're not starting at zero financially. You have something that you've invested in and something that has worked kind of, you know, I talk to a lot of people that are either lawyers, bankers, doctors, dentists that are kind of midway through their career path and recognizing that they can't go back down the mountain completely. They have obligations. They have family that they have to pay for. They have a salary and an income that most people would really kill for, but they're not fulfilled in the way that they want to be fulfilled, and they don't know how to start over. They don't want to start over, and really they shouldn't start over. And so I thought it would be interesting to kind of go over this question of like, what would I do in that position, assuming that I have no financial, like I can't just like put $1 million into something and I don't have an audience, and really like building an audience isn't super available to me because I'm worried about my boss seeing it or my coworker seeing it. And it's this really difficult place because you feel stuck, but you can't really talk to people about it because most people that you're around, you're making more money than they are. And so for you to complain about your job that you make six figures at, most people are like, oh, I would kill to have those kind of problems. Like, you just need to be more grateful and shut up and like put your head down, nose to the grindstone. My dad would have killed to have that. And so there's all this like guilt and shame around you not being as fulfilled as you think that you should be anyway. So I wanted to take that frame and not address it from the standpoint of you're starting at zero, you're an 18-year-old kid, you just dropped out of college, because it's really a place that I've never been, and so I'm not great to answer it. But I have been in the place before of someone that spent a lot of time to get a job that I thought that was gonna, that I thought the job was gonna be my career. I thought I was gonna do what I was gonna do for the rest of my life. And then when I got into it, I realized that I wanted to do not that. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew that I didn't want to do the thing that I was doing. And I didn't know if there was something wrong with me. I didn't know if I just needed to wait it out and get more senior in the position. But at this point, I've talked to enough people going forward that like are partners at law firms or senior associates at big firms or dentists that are running their own practice or, you know, medical people that are fairly high up. And it becomes less and less about I want to make more money and more about I want to do something that I enjoy and I want to have more control over my financial future. And so with that as the frame, I'm going to talk about what I would do if that dream were a reality and I were to wake up tomorrow and be an eighth year associate or a fifth year associate at a law firm. And I think it's applicable to whatever your job is that you're doing and you're wanting to start a side hustle. That's typically the answer that like people look for, is like they want to start a side hustle, but they don't know, they don't have an idea, or they think that they don't have enough money. The first thing, kind of the frame, is different results require different actions. And so everything that I'm going to talk about is with the idea that like what you're doing up to this point, what I've done up to this point, if I find myself as a 34-year-old practicing law that I don't want to do, like what I'm doing right now isn't working. And it takes kind of admitting that it's not working. And once you can admit that it's not working the way that you would like it to, that you're not where you want to be, then that gives you the permission to do something different. And different may, it may be worse for a little bit, but different will at least lead to a different result. And so the first thing would be to remind myself that I'm going to go through a process of changing the inputs of what I'm doing and how I spend my time and what I'm working on and who I talk to and who I spend my time with. If I change those inputs for long enough, the outputs, the results will change as well. And so the first thing that I would do, this is actually probably the hardest step for me to do in my own path, even though I did this as a 26-year-old. The first thing that I would do is I would confide in my community and I would start talking to safe people within my circle that what I'm doing isn't working and I'm not happy with it. And one of the reasons why this was the hardest thing for me to do is law school and my academic career up to that point, which was really the place that I had the most success in, and I was good at school and I was good at taking tests. And law school is a very competitive environment, and you're all fighting for rankings. And the higher ranked you are, the better your job prospects are, and it's all graded on a bell curve. And so if you get an A, that means you're taking the A from someone else. And so you're always trying to find an edge. Like everyone that's in your community is really your competitor. And so you're trying to fight against them. And really a law firm reinforces that idea that the people that are in your cohort are your competitors, not your potential companions or community. Because at a law firm, you're trying to become a partner. That's kind of the end goal. That's the brass ring that you're fighting for. And you becoming the partner will happen to the exclusion of everyone else that's in your cohort becoming the partner. You know, there's only one or two spots. You're playing musical chairs, right? And every single year, a chair is getting taken away and people are forced either up or out. And so growing up and experiencing life in that environment reinforces this like lone wolf mentality of like, I'm going to do my own thing. And if I find an edge or if I find something that I can do that other people can't do, the last thing I want to do is share that with them or be open and vulnerable with them, because they could use that against me at some point. And their success is directly proportional to my failure, right? They're inversely correlated. If you succeed, it means I fail. If I succeed, it means you fail, because we're fighting for a limited number of chairs. And we both can't win. There's no win-win situation in law school or in a law firm or in a lot of these super competitive jobs. And the problem is when you're going out on your own and you're trying to figure out a way off of the beaten path and you're finding your own path, it's easy to try to do that as a lone wolf. And I know when I was practicing law, everything that I did to get started was a lone wolf answer, which was the first thing that I tried to do is I tried to become a real estate agent. So I passed the real estate agency exam, which I was at a lawyer at a big firm. That's like a super atypical thing to do, to like have a job that you're making 180 grand a year at, and then try to do this other thing that pays you zero salary. Like most people would say, just focus on, keep the main thing the main thing. And like, if you become good enough at this thing, then like you won't have to worry about all that other stuff. So like the first thing that I tried to do was become a real estate agent, and it didn't work. And then the second thing that I tried to do was I tried to start like a faceless Instagram account, because it couldn't be my face, because I didn't want the people that I was working for and with to see that I was doing something else. And so I tried to do this like faceless Instagram account, which also didn't work. And then I tried to buy a residential house that I was going to turn into a senior care facility. And that was the first time that I tried to partner with someone. I tried to partner with a couple of buddies from law school, and it ended up just not working out because we were in different geographies, and like that particular business model required us all to be at the same place doing the same thing. And it just didn't work out for a couple of reasons. And really when it started to change was when I quit spending so much time with the people I was working with. And I tried to find safe people outside of the organization that I was working in. And so I found a buddy he became my buddy. I found a guy that was working at KPMG, and he was an associate. He was around my age, he's a year older than me. And he also didn't like his job. He was my first kind of ally. And my second ally was when I finally came clean to my wife that like I wasn't enjoying what I was doing. And I was really worried about how she would react to that, because it felt like we had spent so much time investing in law school and moving to this place. And we had a 2-year-old daughter at the time. I was so worried that she would be disappointed in all this time that we had invested in me becoming a lawyer and me saying, yo, I don't know what I want. You know, it was weird for me to be 26 years old and to have, and it'd be the first time that to say like, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up, because everything that I thought that I wanted to be, I don't want to be. But when I told her, she's like, oh, like, I know you're not happy. Like, it's obvious. It's obvious that you're not happy with what you're doing. So like, let's start looking for alternatives. So those two people were the first people that were safe. And I made a couple of mistakes along the way. Like I did confide with some people that were that were working at the law firm that I was working in. And it ultimately got, like, word got back to the partnership that I didn't like what I was doing. And it made it very difficult for me to try to find my next thing. So confiding in your community is an important part, like starting to find some allies that you can talk about your frustrations with, but also like turning it into something productive as like, here are some things that I think could work. And I'm going to tell you how I would go about finding some things that I think would work. But I would confide in your community, and I wouldn't have it be people that are working in the same organization as you, because they're playing a musical chairs game. They're trying to find their seat when the music stops, and you're circling around those chairs with them at the exact same time. And so for you to confide in someone that you're competing against and say, yo, I don't even know if I want to play this musical chairs game anymore. It's too tempting for most people to not use that as a way to push you aside. So that way you don't have the option to play musical chairs anymore. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to do it as covertly as possible, so that way you can find your escape raft before the boat starts sinking, before you get kicked out of the job that you have. And so it wouldn't be the first thing that I would talk to somebody about outside of a spouse or a parent or someone that you get it. And really, even when I talked to my parents about it, when I told them how frustrated I was, their answer was kind of like, grit your teeth and bear it. Like, you're a first year associate. Like, now's not the time to start switching things. And I think that they were giving me the right advice from the perspective that they had, which was like, you're just barely starting. Like, it's not supposed to be rainbows and butterflies. Like, this is kind of the grinded out phase. And so you just need to stick it out, wait for 5 years. But when I talked to my KPMG buddy and when I talked to my wife about it, that was the first time that I felt like I had permission to not be happy, which then allowed me to find what the paths were that I could channel that into something productive outside of just complaining all the time or doing something stupid like drinking my sorrows away or gambling it away or trying to find thrills and sedation in a different path other than something productive. Like, what do I ultimately want to do with my life? So the first thing I would do is confide in your community. And to the people that would say, I don't have anyone that's like that, I'm going to address that as kind of the third step, which is about doing different things and going to different places. Because if you're 26, 27, 28 years into your journey, 22 years into your journey, and you don't have one person that you can be honest with about what you want to do for the rest of your life, then you need to break the pattern and do something differently. So that's high level. The second thing. Today's episode is brought to you by the Exit Operating System. If you run a business right now and you are thinking about selling it one day and you want to know what you should focus on in order to maximize your exit value, go to exitos.io and sign up now. Peace. That I think I would do, and I've come to this over time because I got trapped in this. I got trapped in the idea of ideas, which is I haven't left yet and I haven't found my thing yet because I don't have the right idea yet. And I've talked to enough people that are so stuck on this idea of ideas that they feel like the idea is the missing ingredient that they need in order for them to progress forward. And I think it's wrong. I think instead of ideas, you should start finding bets to place. And I call them baby bets because it needs to be low risk enough that you don't feel so much anxiety that you're going to lose your ass on everything. So they have to be baby bets. Or bets on a budget, like small bets, but a bet versus an idea. And I'm going to tell you why, because when you think of, I don't have the right idea to work on, what that does is it keeps you in your head. You're thinking that an idea is in here and you're trying to find the path to go from having it in here to have it be manifested externally so that way you can work on it. And really the thing that you're looking for isn't in here, because you've been in here your whole life and you still haven't found it in here. And there's nothing that you're going to do that will take it from in here to out there versus a bet. A bet is less about what's in here and it's more about what's happening in the world around you, where you feel like you have an asymmetric risk. You have something that has disproportionate upside relative to the downside that you're taking. So you're finding something that if you're right about it, you get rich. And if you're wrong about it, you don't go broke. And the other important thing, the important distinction between a bet and an idea is when we have an idea, we get precious about it because it feels like it's a part of us. And so it's something that we want to protect. And it's something that if we get negative feedback on, we fight against. And because it feels like we're getting, if it feels for most people, this isn't for everyone, for most people, especially if they haven't spent a lot of time trying to execute on an idea, if their idea is getting criticized, they feel like they're getting criticized. And so it keeps you stuck because you can't get the feedback that an idea requires is out in the marketplace. And typically, if you haven't done a side hustle before, you don't even have the steps yet to like bring the idea to fruition enough in order for you to get feedback on what the marketplace has to say about it. And so like, even if you had the perfect idea, if I gave you the perfect idea based on your unique circumstances, your unique skills, everything, if I gave you the perfect idea and I said, this is your path out, here's your escape ticket, go and do, the next thing you would say is, I don't know how to do it. I can't execute on it because even though it's the perfect idea for me, I don't know how, because you're doing something that you've never done before by definition. So you don't know how to do it, again, by definition. And so when you're thinking of ideas versus bets, ideas are precious. Ideas are in your head. Bets incentivize you to go out and explore. And it also takes all of the pressure away from you failing at something, because bets are going to not win all the time. If it's a sure thing, the surest thing that you have is your job, right? And your job that you have right now isn't really a bet, because there's no like asymmetric outcome. You know what the outcome is going to be. You show up, you deliver the work product, and the only asymmetric outcome that exists in your job is you think that it's secure and you ultimately get fired. So it's only downside asymmetry in what you're doing in your job. And so we're looking for something that has the inverse of that, upside asymmetry, that has very little downside relative to what it could potentially be on the upside. A job is the opposite of that. A job is massive downside with very capped upside. Obviously, there's exception to that. If you're a salesperson, you have uncapped upside, but usually you kind of know within a range of like what you're going to do within your job. And so a bet versus an idea is something that will help you move forward, and you not knowing what the bet is just yet becomes not limiting to you. It incentivizes you to explore and to do something differently. And so for me to find a bet that makes sense, there are three things that are important for me to look for in a bet. And this is what I would do, again, if I was stuck at a job. First, right, we've already talked to our community. So I wouldn't think of it as only me placing a bet. I like, for me in the escape room business, I could not have done that business by myself. I found somebody that was also interested in leaving. And so like, don't think of the bet in terms of what only you can do by yourself, because that limits the scope of what's available. That limits the amount of bets that you're able to take. So as you start finding compatriots, as you start finding people that are willing to go down this path with you, think of what the bet is in that context of what you can do together as a group, not what you by yourself can do. So here are the three things. The first thing, the most important thing probably, is it has to be something where I know that there's demand. And the reason why there has to be demand there is because you don't have the time or the capital or the inclination right now. You just don't have the resources to create a new market and to capture new demand that doesn't exist before. So what that means, how I know that there's demand, is it means that people have bought something similar to the thing that I want to do before. So in the escape room business, I did not come up with that concept. I didn't come up with, what I should do is I should like come up with this like crazy carnival thing and like have people get locked in a room and I think they'll pay for it because I think it could be fun. Like that had existed for a decade before. It was a trend that was already happening. The most important thing within demand is either it has to be like the bigger the wave of demand, the easier it will be for you to execute on something. So now is not the time. Your first side hustle is not the time for you to create something massively innovative. It's the time for you to know what already sells and create your unique spin on the thing that already sells. In the escape room business, escape rooms are already selling. I did a couple escape rooms that had actors in them. I thought that they were more fun because I didn't really care about the puzzles and like any of that other stuff. So I thought, I think it would be better if all of the escape rooms that we do have actors in it and there's some human interaction within the escape room. And that was it. Like, I knew that there was demand there. I had a unique way to deliver and be able to capture that demand. So the first thing is, it has to be something that people are buying already. So this should take off of the table, particularly if you're not a technical like computer person and you're saying you're going to build an app that is the Uber of XYZ. Like, no, you're not. It's not the time right now to do that. Like, you're trying to create a new market and you're trying to hit a grand slam at your first at bat in the MLB. And it's not going to happen. You're like, I would call it fanciful thinking. Like, you're trying to like hit all of your economic needs in one fell swoop, and it just doesn't happen. And what ends up happening is you're trying to play the lottery instead of like learning the basics of like getting points on the board, and you end up wasting years and years and years focused on these ideas that like have no demand. And so the second thing is execution. It has to be something that you and your little group of people can execute on, and you know that you can execute on it. And then again, this, like, I tend to beat up on people that have app ideas, particularly when they're non-technical. And I can only do that because I've wasted at least $50,000 of my own money trying to develop software and apps that I had no business building because I have no technical background whatsoever. The people that were on the team had no technical background. I would always outsource it to India or the Philippines or someplace cheap to try to get it done. And every time that I've tried to do it, it hasn't worked because I have no unique ability to execute on a software business. Even when I tried to do it like in the realm of mergers and acquisitions and like areas of business that I felt like I had a unique ability to do, every time that I've messed up this execution thing, it's always forced me to lose a ton of time and a fair amount of money as well. And so execution, I would think of like, it needs to be simple because you're fighting, you have to understand that you're fighting with one hand tied behind your back right now with the job that you have. You're typically going to be competing against people that are doing it as their full-time thing. And so you need to use every additional piece of leverage that you have. And so when you're trying to build something that you have no idea how to build or do something that you don't know how to do, like you have too many like headwinds that you're going into in order for it to be able to work, that it's just so much easier if you find something that you can uniquely execute on. And the third thing is distribution, which means that, so demand means that we know that people want it because they've been buying something similar to it before. Execution means we know that we can build or acquire and run the thing that they want. And distribution means we know that we have a way for them to see it. We know that we can get our product or service in front of the people that desire to buy it. So there has to be demand, there has to be execution ability, and then there has to be a way to distribute it. And distribution is, again, one of the harder things to do when you're at a job, particularly if you're trying to post on social media and you're worried about people. Like, distribution is a tough nut to crack because a lot of times you're worried about people seeing the thing that you're doing. But you also need your potential customers to see the thing that you're doing. There are a couple ways around that. One would be to partner with someone who has that distribution. So that would be someone who has, I mean, social media is one of the easiest ways to get the distribution. Or to bring someone onto your team that can run Facebook ads, or like you can buy that distribution. Facebook groups, like acquiring Facebook groups, are another way to get that distribution and get it in front of people without your bosses and a colleague seeing the thing that you're trying to build. So distribution will be the third thing. So demand, execution, and distribution. And what you'll see is these three things almost force you out of the lone wolf mentality, because the chances of you as an individual that's working a 40 to 60 hour a week job being able to find the demand, execute it on it by yourself, and also have the distribution, like, your first side hustle should be something that has a partnership aspect to it, because it will speed everything up that you're doing so much quicker. And the lone wolf mentality will keep you stuck so long. Even if you find something that's working, you know, even if you, you know, a lot of times people will start a little consulting practice on the side, but the lone wolf or the solopreneurship, that whole crowd of you doing everything by yourself while you're working a job, what you'll find is that that business will stop when your job gets more difficult because you're the only one that's pushing on it all of the time. And so when you get too tired to push, then the results and all of the momentum that you're getting generated tends to recede. And then you're stuck doing it over and over again. And you never build enough of an escape velocity for you to actually ever put your 2 weeks notice in and quit your job, because like 1 month you make $5,000 and then you lose $600 and then you make $4,000 and then you get busy. So you have 4 months of not doing anything. And then you try to turn the engine back on again and then nothing happens. This happens over and over and over again. And so having people that you can work on this together and finding a safe place for you to work on it with them ends up being an essential thing. So there has to be demand, distribution, and execution. So finding those three things. And so all of that begs the question, that's all fine and good in the theory of what I should be doing and what I should be looking for, but what's the tactical thing that I must do in order to find new bets to take and find new people to take those bets with? And the thing that you have to realize is the most constrained resource that you have at this moment, if you're working a 40 or 60 hour or 70 hour a week job, is the units of time that aren't working. What you cannot do, because I've been in these jobs before, what you can't do is just quit and say, I'm going to burn the boats and figure it out as I go. Because most of you typically have your own responsibilities and obligations. A lot of times you have a spouse, kids, or not enough savings to have it really be worth the risk of you burning the boats in order to move on to the next thing. So the first thing you need to do is confide in your community, find new people. And the second thing you need to do is reset the mindset of, I don't have the right idea, and start thinking about bets. And those, I understand that those are a little bit theoretical. So I would be asking the question, so practically, what does that mean that I should be doing? What should I do differently? And again, we're on the frame of, we're going to change our input so that way the outputs can be different. And so we're just going to start changing anything. And so what I would do is I would look at what I did in the past week outside of work time. Work isn't the thing that you can start taking from just yet. You have to take from your non-work time. That's why one of the benefits of confiding in a spouse that is supportive of you being happier and finding something that's more fulfilling for you is you will end up taking from that time from them for a period of time in order to have so much more of that time later on down the road. A quote that I heard when I was 25 from a mentor that was 30 years ahead of me was basically to live your first 10 years like few will, so that way you can live the rest of your life like few can. And that ended up being what I needed to do. And so the first thing is you have to understand that your most constrained resource right now is your time. You probably have more money than most in the entrepreneurship game, people that are trying to do side hustles, but any side hustle that is like directly linear with the amount of time that you put into it. So that's like delivering DoorDash or, you know, doing work on Fiverr that kind of requires your particular expertise that you can't really outsource, right? All of those things you should be very hesitant to get into because you're still finding yourself in the time trap that your job puts you into. And time is the thing that you have the least of right now. And so the easiest thing to start taking that time back from is your relaxation, entertainment time. So instead of Netflix or drinking or hanging out with high school buddies or talking to your parents for 2 hours on the phone, all of those things. And the problem is you're going to need to do more uncomfortable things than those things are. And those things allow you to stay comfortable and kind of stay complacent. And so as you start moving those things, instead of talking to your parents, going to a networking event that isn't based around your profession, going to a networking event for entrepreneurs or side hustles. And what you'll find as you start getting around new people, and this is what I've found in my own life as well, is that everyone is going about their life with their own certain momentum. And very few people are willing to do the work to change the speed at which they're going. And so if you continue to hang around the same people that are going at the same speed and talking about the same things over and over again, you're talking about how the high school coach didn't play you in the playoff game, and that's why you ended up having to go to this school and your life would be so different, or how difficult things are. Everything is going at a certain speed. And so you need to get into a group of people that are going faster. That will speed you up just by virtue of being around them. People that are serious about having momentum and are willing to try new things and fail at new things for a period of time in order to have a different thing. And that's the hardest part for typically people that are earning six or seven figures, whatever, 100 grand, 95 grand, is that from the outside, it looks like you're successful. It looks like you have your shit together and it looks like you've succeeded. And so then to be able to take that success and kind of put it on the shelf for a period of time and then go and fail at a new thing is a very difficult prospect that most people just can't stomach. It's just not worth it to fail at something because you've worked so hard and been so successful within one domain to then go adjacent to that domain and something that carries inherent risk to it. It's just too overwhelming. And so in order to do it, you have to have support, and you almost always can't do it alone. I actually don't know anyone that has been able to like successfully make the jump alone by themselves without any help. Even if you have like the perfect coach or the perfect mentor, like doing the thing itself, executing on the business, the side hustle, the investment, it still requires its own amount of collaboration and help and people that are in the boat with you working on the thing. That's my tactical advice, is to, you have to open yourself up to new possibilities, which carries inherent risk and risk of failure in it, because if there's no risk of failure, then you're not taking a chance on anything. And that's why a bet versus an idea, the bet requires you to take a chance. It requires you to place money down on something that may not work out and you may lose. And once you're willing to do that, then it starts opening up possibilities and things can start moving for you. And one of the biggest impediments to that, that I would also offer as a tactical thing to change, is start looking at whatever it is that you do to numb your pain as much as you possibly can as to what's happening in your career. For most people, for me, it was watching Netflix and, just like going out to, just trying to escape the problem, taking paid time off to just go to a beach and unwind. The less that you try to escape it and the more that you just face it head on and be able to kind of deal with how frustrated and how unhappy you are, that may make you angry for the first little bit of time, but that anger will at least catalyze a different action. And so just the move of, I'm not going to watch Netflix at night, I'm going to post in a Facebook group, or I'm going to read a business book and start learning more. Even the learning more thing, I hesitate to say, because that can become its own like way to procrastinate. Like, you reading a book is better than Netflix because it's less like gratifying and it requires more effort. But even that in and of itself is less productive than meeting a new human, interacting with a human as opposed to a book or a like thing that you can do lone wolfing by yourself. Less lone wolfing is the thing that will start moving you forward. And so that's what I would do. And I would say that if you're looking for a better community than what you have, there is something that I've been working on as I've been talking to these people that are so frustrated with their job and don't know how to take the next step. And so we're building this community that can be an online community that's private, so that way there's zero chance that your boss or your coworker see it unless they themselves are also wanting to leave. And we talk about not one specific way to have a side hustle that works. Like, it's not like, this is all about real estate wholesaling. And what we do is we interview people and share our own stories. Me and my partner in the business is Jamie Wilkie. She was a pharmacist that built her own business that she sold and was able to exit the pharmacy business, pharmacy working business. And so the community is all around people that want to start something else and aren't sure how to do it. So it's a community of like-minded people that are all not looking to deliver DoorDash on the side, but they're looking to have different options. And we bring people in that have faceless Instagram accounts, and they know how to deal with outside business activities that they have to disclose to their boss. And they're worried about their boss finding it and their coworkers finding it and how they go about doing it in a sustainable way and building something that can scale enough in order for them to leave their job eventually. That's what the community is all around. So if you want to be a part of a community like that, go to joinprimo.com. All the information is there, and we will see you on the next one. Peace.